Hello and welcome to the Vet Blast podcast. I am your host, Dr. Adam Christman, Chief Veterinary Officer here at Fetch DVM 360.
So this podcast, my friends, is something in the making, and I want to ask the listeners, the true way that you can diagnose food allergies in dogs and cats is ... Wait for it. Don't tell them yet. But we have the one and only, the derm vet she goes by on Instagram, Dr. Ashley Bourgeois, is in the house. How are you, my friend?
Woo-woo! I am so good. And if people are, if they knew the heartache it went to try to schedule this between us, I think it has been over a year in the making.
Yes. I can't get over that too. It's just crazy with everything going on. You know, everybody's busy. We get it too. But I have been waiting for this moment. So I'm kind of like geeking out. I'm like, oh my gosh, I actually have her on the podcast right now.
I was sitting there like, will he show? Is this happening? Right. But we're here. We got it.
Yes. So to our listeners, Dr. Ashley Bourgeois is a board certified veterinary dermatologist out in Portland, Oregon. You have to listen to her own podcast as well as the content that she provides. She's a national speaker. She writes for us at DVM 360. She's on our editorial advisory board. She does a whole boatload of other things and great work both in and out of the veterinary community. And we're going to focus on this session, this podcast on food allergies, Dr. Bourgeois, because my goodness. Let me actually ask you, is this something that you see quite often that gets referred to you?
You know, food allergies are really tough. Yes, we do see a lot of food allergy, but food allergy is more complicated than people think. I do see a lot of clients coming in who often want to blame the food, right? Like that's the first thing clients think is, well, I took out chicken. So it's more complicated than that. And what's really, really difficult is a lot of these dogs with food allergies have other forms of allergies too. So it's not a cut and dry process to diagnose them, but it is a very extremely important thing to rule out as a cause of pruritus.
Right. And what is the current data showing? What's the research showing? Like what's the percentage of dogs that have food allergies?
Yeah, you know, it's really interesting. You can see kind of things all throughout the literature. I know traditionally we've kind of said like, you know, a third maybe of dogs with allergic symptoms, but I hesitate to really always land on a percentage because a lot of this also depends on geography of where you are. Because depending on where you are, flea allergy can be rampant in a lot of areas. But in general, it tends to be more of like a quarter to a third of our patients. So not the majority. We're going to see atopic dermatitis and flea bite hypersensitivity, again, depending on where you are geographically, more common. Right. But a significant portion of those dogs with food allergies also have atopic dermatitis. So that's where it is really important to still do the diet trials, because if we don't identify that, we may not be able to control that pet as well compared to if we found that food allergy.
Yeah. You know, I did not know that it was that high, actually. I remember hearing probably back in vet school about like 8 to 10%, and now it's much higher than that. So it's interesting.
I definitely think, 8 to 10%, if I think of sole food allergy dogs, you know, and the literature has changed a little bit about this, but I think of just food and that is it's pretty low for me. But if I think about pets where I make a dietary change and they're much better from that change, but we still need to do other things like treat atopic dermatitis, I would put it more in like that third range. So that's why it's still important for us to look for it. But as a sole food allergy, you're probably right.
Yeah, it's interesting how it increased. And also talk to me about pattern recognition. What can you tell the listeners about? Where are some areas we can really hone in on if we're thinking that we got a dog with food allergies?
Yeah, what's really tough is food allergy and atopic dermatitis can look identical. So you can look at a dog with allergic symptoms, and I could not definitively tell you, hey, for sure that is a food allergic dog or for sure that is an atopic dog. However, there are some main things we see that can give you kind of a increased suspicion. So things I would think of is obviously otitis. So if this is a dog that has just struggled non-seasonal otitis, then we're definitely going to want to rule out a food allergy. Especially the history becomes really important with food allergy. If they started really young, like under a year of age with things like otitis, if they have a lot of pruritus to the perioral region, so they go for their mouth a lot, they rub their heads on stuff, they scoot a lot. So of course we're going to see perianal pruritus. then I would definitely want to do a diet trial. Flip side is if I have a dog who's more geriatric and I'm convinced it's allergic dermatitis. The one caveat I always put with a dog who's older and all of a sudden has developed pruritus is there's other things that are not allergies that can cause that. So even like skin lymphoma can cause a lot of itch in an older dog. But if I have a dog who didn't really show me signs of allergies before, and then they're all of a sudden itchy as they're older, and I really do think it's allergic dermatitis, we see a bimodal distribution, start really young or start when they're older with food allergy. So history becomes super key. But distribution on the body, I would definitely think of perianal region, ears. You can still get a lot of paw chewing and licking, perioral region. Those are kind of the main areas.
And is it true you can see food allergies as early as 6 months of age in certain dogs or puppies?
Definitely. Yeah. You can see them quite young, which is hard because atopic dermatitis, we often say, starts under 3 years of age. So that's why it's really important to do the diet trial, because if you catch a dog who's just food allergic, great. It's hard to get through the diet trial, but once you do, you may have just saved them a lot of time, effort, future infections. But you can have these dogs start very, very young with either disease.
Wow. Yes. All right. I want to get to that question that we just started at with our listeners. So this is a big question, I know, and we're going to hear it from the derm vet herself, listeners. So the true definitive way to diagnose a food allergy in dogs is
a prescription or home cooked diet trial. The end. No serum testing, no hair testing, no saliva testing has been shown at this point in, you know, the time of this recording of the podcast has been shown to be accurate. I will be the first one when that test is out there and I can put full faith in it. Like, I think that's the hard thing for people. We don't love doing diet trials either as dermatologists, most of us. It's important. I would love to just do a test and be able to say yes or no, but the literature has not been supportive, and allergies are just, they're expensive enough for clients. Yeah. We don't need to be running tests that are not going to be helpful for them.
Right. Okay. So if we diagnose or we're trying to do a dietary elimination trial with the food, what's the minimum that you would accept to identify that they do have a food allergy? And I mean, is this something that they stay on for life?
Yeah, great question. So the literature, you'll see anything from like 6 to 12 weeks. Most of us, 8 weeks, you're going to get like 90% of them. So I try to get owners to commit to 8 weeks of feeding that food. And that's once they're on it strictly, right? There's usually a transition period. Now, there's some things that you can really use and teach your owners that can be super helpful. So for example, if I have a dog that has a history of soft stools or GI symptoms, which actually doesn't happen as often as you would think, we get a lot of food allergy dogs who have completely normal stools. So that's why it's really important to look at the other symptoms. But say I have a dog that I know they have chronic soft stools, we'll actually see gastrointestinal signs improve within a couple weeks of a dietary switch. So GI signs will become better faster than skin signs will. So if I have a dog that has that, I tell the owners after a few weeks, if you see stools firming up, that's a really good sign for us. And I'll actually tell them if they're worsening or not improving to let me know, because we may change the diet that they're on. But 8 weeks tends to be pretty standard for most of us, because, you know, if you start extending it too much longer, owners start to get, if they're not getting better, they start to get really anxious, which I would be too. I've done a diet trial on my own dog. But you want to make sure you're giving them time to actually be diagnosed as well.
All right. And is it something that they need to stay on for life?
Oh, yes. So no. So that's actually the other thing. So client communication with food allergies is extremely important. And I used to hate walking into some of those conversations where I could just get a feeling like we were going to maybe have it wasn't going to go as smoothly as I hoped.
Right.
But actually now I love it. And I love talking about this, because there's a few things I think can be really beneficial to have those difficult conversations. And the two main things I think about in veterinary dermatology: the diet trial talk and the flea prevention talk. Wow. And this is how I start it. When I start thinking, oh, I'm really worried they have a food allergy, and maybe the owner will say, well, I already took chicken out, or I feed this really good other, you know, I feed this great food. And I always start with this, like, hey, you know, I just want your, I get it. You're going to get a lot of opinions about this. It's like what I tell owners, because I think it always helps to relate it to people. because sure. that just clicks in our mind. So I tell owners, if you go online and Google, what diet should I eat? You're going to get so many different opinions, right? You're going to get, depends on which website you go to, depends on which person you talk to, right? Whether you should eat paleo or vegan or whatever, whatever diets out there, there's so many. And people understand that because we all have different opinions over what foods we should be eating ourselves. So I say, you know, I get it. You're going to get so many different opinions out there. I just want to take the time to talk about, you know, based on my training in the literature, what I feel like constitutes a really good diet trial, because I'd really like to rule this out for your pet if we don't have to go into things like allergy testing for environmental allergies and, you know, allergy shots. I want to make sure we don't do something unnecessary. But in the end, we are always going to do what you feel comfortable with, because I cannot force a client to do anything. Right. So I just give them that out. And guess what? 99% of people will listen. Doesn't mean they'll all do it, but 99% of people will listen because I have given them control, and they do have control. Like, I can only make a client do what they're willing to do. So I just say that, and it takes a lot of the anxiety and pressure away. And then I start talking about, you know, the diet trials and the importance of using either prescription or home cooked because of residues. And then I compare it to things like a child with peanut allergies, how they have to be cautious even of, you know, something that says this was made in a facility with nuts. I just say those residues in the food essentially could cause us to not identify a food allergy if it's truly there. The other thing, and this is, I promise this is getting to the answer to your question. I told you that I would not be short-winded about this topic. Yeah. The other thing is 8 weeks. So I tell them, give me 8 weeks. And why that's important is because the answer to your question is no. They don't necessarily have to be on that diet long-term. For me, those 8 weeks are to be a diagnostic test. Yes or no? Yes or no? So at the end of 8 weeks, let's say they've done great on the food and they are food allergic, but the owner decides they don't want to feed that diet forever. We can go down the rabbit hole as much as they want, right? We can do individual ingredient challenges. We can try another food and see if they tolerate it well. We could get a nutritionist involved and do a home cooked diet if they really want to do that long term. I just need those 8 weeks to know if it matters or not. Because if it doesn't matter, we don't have to keep, you know, going back and forth about the food and whether we need to do something long term for them. That way, we can move on to something like atopic dermatitis. And it really helps my owners to know that at 8 weeks, we have an out, even if the food really matters for them. Now, I will say majority of them, when they do really well on a diet, decide to feed that long term because we're only using diets that are nutritionally balanced for that pet. But it just takes away that anxiety that I'm just trying to keep them on this food forever. I'm like, I just want to identify a food allergy in your pet.
Right.
Lots of different directions we can go after those 8 weeks. And that's really, really helped me, those kind of things, having these conversations with owners.
Yeah, that's really helpful. And what are some best practices that you have seen or have recommended to pet parents to set them up for success? In other words, it's hard for them to understand food is love in our culture. And yes. So you mean, doc, I can't do their heartworm prevention. I can't give them a little piece of cheese. I can't cook for them. Like, what are some best practices that have those, you know, successful compliance food trials?
Yeah. Well, first of all, I ask, can they do it? Can you do it? Because that's really important, right? Like, can you do it? And I see this as a person who did a diet trial when I had a one-year-old at home. Mm. It was super hard. The dog learns pretty quickly. The high chair is the place to be. So I ask him if they can do it around holidays. Hey, holidays are coming up. You're going to have a lot of people visiting your home. Can you be strict, or should we wait 2 months to start this diet trial and we'll just keep them comfortable with whatever else we need to do? Because I do want to set them up for success. You give medications at home, you have to give it in a piece of cheese. Okay, well, maybe we should use a diet that has a canned version of that food. And maybe that, because I'm pretty open with diets, whether it's novel protein or hydrolyzed, which I know we're not going to necessarily dive into. But the reason I tend to be pretty open, by nature, I like hydrolyzed, but sometimes I have someone who says, I have to have a canned version. And depending on availability, right, because there's been backorder issues with some diets, we might use a novel protein. And as long as we get a good history, that's, to me, that's totally appropriate. But if they have to have something like that, or they're training, they have to have treats, then that's going to probably, you know, sway me a little bit over what diet I use. Now, to answer your question about the preventions, I have changed myself a little bit with this, depending on which preventions you're using. You certainly could use something like, you know, you're not going to get the heartworm from it, but you could use something like Bravecto at the beginning of the diet trial because it has 12 weeks of coverage. So they wouldn't get that flavoring introduced to them again in those that during that diet trial. If they're really on the monthly preventions and I feel confident that owner can monitor their pet for any flares, I often will still let them give it, especially the isoxazolines. They're mostly hydrolyzed like soy or pork proteins, depending on which one it is. So they're pretty low risk. So a lot of times I'll let them do it, but I just have them monitor when they're given. Because if they did okay, and then they got something exposed for like one day and they got itchier and they can watch for that, then we probably can pick up on it. I used to change all of it, like go to Bravecto or go to a topical or get something like the injectable heartworm, but it really can overwhelm clients for something that is fairly low risk. So depending on the client, I've changed, and that's different between dermatologists, but that's kind of just, I really try to be client centric in my practice. And so I really think about that depending on the client, but those are all super important questions. Like, do you need treats? How do you give the pills? Are they on supplements? That's important. Are they on flavored supplements they got online? We need to take those away. So those are the things that you want to make sure you have handouts about, you talk to the owner about, or you train your staff to really talk to the owner about, so that we don't end up with the 8-week recheck. Oh, but I gave a piece of hot dog the whole time.
Right.
All of us hate when that happens. So we really, really want to try to not let that happen.
Yeah. And I've had some clients that have actually, just because of their own behavior, human behaviors, they would, you know, replace the cookie jar with the kibble itself. Mm-hmm. And so just by the dog going to the jar or whatever, just knowing that they don't really necessarily know the difference. So, but they feel like they have to give something, they go ahead and give that specific therapeutic diet that was prescribed, which I thought was like a good idea. Some have made, I had a woman, she took the kibble. She actually made it into pate, literally made like dog biscuit cookie cutters out of it. Adding water to it, you know? So,
definitely. But no,
I thought it was really clever. Yeah.
Yep. I've had clients do that too, where if they want to use a certain diet, say like Ultimino, I use Ultimino a decent amount when we can get it. And I really like that diet. But I've had owners really like, I'm okay to do it. And I'm like, well, can you just use the kibble as treats? And they're like, oh yeah, they don't care. So, but then you have some clients who say, oh no, you know, like you said, food is love. So it's almost their perception that they have to have something else, but you're absolutely right. I've had people pulverize kibble, add water to it to make a paste. I've had them bake cookies. I mean, they can do all that if they're willing to, for sure.
Right. Yeah. So interesting. It really is. And lastly, while we're wrapping up here, I know we're talking a lot about spectrum of care in veterinary medicine, and access to care is also hot too, but spectrum of care in this particular situation, to the client that you get Dr. Bourgeois to say, this all sounds great, but you know what? I just don't have it right now. I just don't have it. You know, we're in different times right now where we're talking about the gold standard. What is the gold standard anymore? You know, but if so what do you say, or what are some sound bites that you can provide us or communication to clients that may not have that ability to afford those things?
Yeah, it's a great question, and it's extremely important. Even as a specialist, I get people who have financial concerns. And that's life. You know, people will say, oh, I can't afford that. And they'll feel ashamed. I'm like, that is life. Like, we're in a really tough time. We all have different situations. Like, we're here to help you no matter what. Just because we can't do everything we want to do doesn't mean we can't do anything. So depending on the pet, if I had one that had like severe concurrent gastrointestinal signs, maybe my priority is just the diet and that's it. So like, you know, maybe I can't do cytology. I'll just do lots of topicals if I don't feel confident that I want to send home an antibiotic without confirming it on cytology. But let's just take the typical case that comes in and, you know, we're kind of just between atopy and food allergy. Like, we want to do the food allergy, but we think there's a good chance like it's atopic. You know, sometimes they say step by step. So maybe our first visit is just treating infection and going on an antipyretic, whether it's Apoquil, whether it's Cytopoint, whether it's, you know, steroids, whatever fits into their cost allowance and what they're able to do and the history of that pet. If they come back and they are doing wonderful and I really want to do a diet trial, but maybe it's just not in the cards to do it quite at that time, we don't do it. You know, we put it off until they can do it. Or maybe if that dog just really responds well to an antipyretic and they're happy with that, and we do the appropriate monitoring and they don't have the few hundred dollars to spend on, you know, 2 month diet trial, depending on the size of the dog, maybe that's a reasonable space for that dog to be in. You know, maybe if that dog's quality of life is good, we're okay with that. So I totally agree with you. There is gold standard and we love to do gold standard, but we still, there's always a pet and a client at the end of the day that we are trying to help. Right. And that even goes to when I have to use, you know, just steroids to control their itch when maybe I don't want to. Like, I'd rather have them, if I can do it responsibly, I'd rather have that pet be comfortable than nothing at all. So it's part of the puzzle we put together, because in dermatology, we ask our clients to do a lot. Like, we are very much a client heavy specialty, right? Flea prevention and diets and an antipyretic, and then hopefully we'll allergy test you. Here's some shampoo and a mousse you should go home with. And here's all these different things we can do. So sometimes we can do all of it at once, and sometimes we have to pick and choose. And I say you maximize what's going to make that pet the most comfortable, and we can always edge our way into other things if they're able to in the future.
I love that. I mean, bravo for saying that and sharing that with our listeners, because it's so true, especially in this day and age. And just as you were saying that, I also thought, you know, spectrum of care also goes to the client's abilities, literally physical abilities to do certain things. And you're right, as a dermatologist, as a veteran general practitioner, we are asking them to like bathe and do things and leave-ons and sprays. I had a client, I never forget this too. She said yes to everything. She took everything out the door because she was afraid to tell me that she has rheumatoid arthritis and she can't even take the bottle off the caps. And I was just like, oh my God, why didn't you tell me? You know, she's like, I didn't want you to yell. I'm like, what are we going to say? We have to know. But I think it brings up a good point of just setting up that expectation. We want to set our clients up for, I always call it sex. Yes, is what we want to do.
Of course you would. Of course you would.
Right.
Yeah.
Versus like them going out the door and not like feeling ashamed or whatever. But it is like to the clients that are doing food allergies, they may not be able to even open up the bag of food. You know, it's just so interesting what we talk about.
Oh, totally. And that's why I always tell them, like, we always give an estimate, especially to our new clients. So, you know, I'll say, hey, I'm going to ideally put together the plan that I think makes the most sense for your pet. However, if we need to take a step back, my technician, because they're usually the ones that go into the estimate, they're going to know the priorities we have and just make sure we are able to do. So to the point about the food, they have holidays coming up and grandma, grandpa, there ain't no way they're not giving table scraps. Don't start the food trial, you know, ask. I've totally had that happen with clients. I will also piggyback off that real quick and say, do not prejudge. Because sometimes owners, like, we'll have, say, elderly owners who come in, and I've also had owners with arthritis, and we have that conversation, but they are willing to go to the groomer once a week. If we think bathing once a week will help, they are willing to do it. Or their son lives next door and their son loves the dog and he's totally willing to bathe it, you know, twice a week. So I just ask, can you bathe your dog twice a week? Yeah. Can you do a diet trial? Do you know we can be strict right now? And I think in a world where we are asking our clients to do a lot, that goes a long way. Cause again, our clients have the power to decide what they are going to agree to. And it's all a team effort. And I have owners who say and it may be a younger couple and they have a new baby at home and they just can't mentally get themselves to bathe that dog right now.
Right.
Then I'll say, great, then let's send home a mousse or let's, you know, treat this way. So I totally agree with everything you're saying. It's extremely important.
It really is. Well, this has been awesome, my friend. Finally,
long time coming.
I know, finally. So wait, tell everybody where we can, this is just to the listeners, this is just a small hook of what you can get from the Derm Vets podcast. So tell us where we can listen, your website, all that fun stuff.
Yes. You know, as a mom of two young kids and a working veterinarian who's very busy, I kept life simple for all, including myself, and not trying to come up with a bunch of names. It is pretty much all under the Derm Vet. Vet Instagram is definitely where I am the most active. I'm also on Facebook and LinkedIn. their LinkedIn's under my name, Ashley Bourgeois. And then I do have the dermvet.com, which has some content on it. And then, as you so graciously mentioned, I have my own podcast, the Dermvet Podcast, because again, I like to keep things simple. But it's very much discussions like these with other, you know, veterinarians, or solo episodes where pretty much this is the type of content I put together. It's meant to be easy, tangible information that anyone can access, because I know we all have busy lives, and I have so much respect for general practitioners. Having to know everything is super daunting. That's why I just learned one thing really well: skin and ears.
There you
I
go.
I can punt everything else. So I know you guys have a lot to learn. So, you know, I really want people to be better dermatologists in their practice.
Oh, and you're doing it so well through all your reach on social media and your podcast. So congratulations for all the hard work that you do. So I'm so proud of you.
Thank you. And thank you so much for having me.
Of course. Thank you for everything you do. And thank you to our listeners for tuning in and continue to do great work. Please don't forget to rate today's podcast. It always helps us out. And we'll see you next time right here on the Vet Blast Podcast.
Bye.
Take care, everybody.
Thank you for listening to the Vet Blast Podcast with me, Dr. Adam Christman. Tune in next time. Remember, take care of your animals and always stay possum.